Welcome to the IRIS podcast. This talk was recorded at Critical Skills for Critical Times conference and workshop organised by Murray Collaborative Learning Network, held at Murray College, 17th of March 2011. The Improvement Service, Collaboration and Learning by Colin Mayer, Chief Executive, Improvement Service.
I was asked to do two things really, set the context of what's happening in public services just now. And in many ways, I think it's probably been useful that Richard went on first because that set the broader economic context we're in. I want to pull that down a bit to the realities we live with public services in Scotland, the public finances, and what we know about what's going to happen to them short to medium term, but also some of the other pressures that if we're looking at leadership of public services in Scotland, we're going to have to address across the next period. My introductory remarks will probably merely add to the gloom epically created by Richard in his introductory presentation. As he was speaking, I was doing an interview with the BBC in Glasgow about 3 weeks ago, and as I came out, there was a bucket there, and above it was a label saying, please use razor blades here. And I thought, that does kind of sum up the state of morale just now around the BBC and broader public services in Scotland. But I'll try not to gloom us down too much, because I do also think, if you look at the kind of gaps that Richard's talked about, likely in the public finances, medium to long term in Scotland, we also have to honestly reflect that some of the ways in which we've used money across the last decade have been catastrophically poor, and it may be quite possible to achieve better outcomes for people in Scotland on a much lower resource base than we've historically enjoyed. The background, I think, for the public sector, and Richard's slides in The Economy showed this, is we're coming off a decade since devolution, where on average budgets grew at about 4 to 5% per annum. So to some extent, any reduction of that or stopping of that was always going to hit us like a sledgehammer, because we have got used to simply more money arrives year on year. If issues arise or difficulties arise, there would always be money coming from somewhere to sort that out. We are now moving into a period of 15 to 20 years where that will definitively not be the case. So how we focus now is of critical importance. If we start with what we know, we've got the Scottish Government's budget picture for the next 4 years. We only have a budget for next year, I think not unassociated with the fact we're about to have an election. But what that means is you can expect there will be a spending review probably between June and September of this year in Scotland that will then set the picture for us for the subsequent 3 years. But if we look at the budget, we know between now and 2014, there'll be an over 11% real cut in our spending. The actual cash cut is nowhere near as significant as that, but obviously inflation will erode our spending power as we go forwards. That's better than public services were planning for this time last year. So yes, it is not good, but it is far better than the assumptions we were making this time last year. But that's for reasons that we'll also have to keep our eye on. The biggest single reason why public service spending in Scotland will be higher than we anticipated is that the Chancellor has taken far more money out of the welfare benefit system than we anticipated. And if you look at the level of ingrained welfare dependency across the whole of Scotland, but in particular parts of Scotland, that may mean our income as public services is slightly higher, but it will almost certainly mean the demands on our services will be very significantly higher as well. Put very crudely, as we go through our next 4 years and find them hard, they'll be less hard because on a kind of annualised basis, 1.7 billion has been taken away from the poorest households in Scotland across that period. So it is a staggeringly substantial sum of money from the point of view of those people, and that will hit particularly those who are unemployed and dependent and job seekers, but it will also hit those in incapacity benefits and related benefits of that sort. So our income line is slightly better than we planned, an 11% real reduction, but the demand equation, I think, is very much worse than we were anticipating because nobody expected the severity of cuts in the social security system. The second thing that's helped us in Scotland is the balance of our spend. The two things that were protected by the UK government, relatively speaking, were health and education. That accounts for about 70% of public spending in Scotland, and therefore, as money has come down line from Westminster, we've actually benefited from the priorities of the UK government in that respect. We know, for the next year at least, how the current government is choosing to absorb the front-ended pressure that Richard talked about. So for local government, in cash terms, we're taking a hit of, on average, 2.7%, but that does vary from at one end of the equation, West Lothian Council, that's taking a 0.01% hit, through at the other end to the Western Islands Council, that's taking a 4.8% hit on its budget. So this is not equally distributed, but the average across Scotland is 2.7. For health, there is 2% cash growth, and that has led to some envious glances from other parts of the public service in Scotland. To put that in perspective, though, within the context of the NHS in Scotland, demand and cost growth annually has been running at between 8 and 10% per annum. So 2% cash growth is actually likely to be experienced as a 5 to 6% cut in spending power against the costs the health service will face as we go forward. And for police and fire services, it's the same averaged 2.7%. that is affecting local government. So in one sense, the services in this room are reasonably privileged. If you take central government budgets in Scotland, national government budgets, the average there is over 10% next year. If you take agencies and public bodies in Scotland, again, the average is about 10%. So, yes, we are going to take a hit. Yes, will we experience it quite hard. But relative to other parts of the public sector in Scotland, the hit in councils, police and health and fire are nowhere near as great as they are in other parts of the public sector. The difficulty, of course, is we have a one-year budget and we have no idea what the next lot will do once they're elected. There may be some issues, I think, from Richard's presentation we carry over here. There is no question that health, and particularly the hospital sector, is iconic with the public in Scotland. It really politically matters. If you balls it up, it does you some very significant damage very quickly. For that reason, if health is running into real difficulties of the costs of medical interventions, drug costs and so on, it's quite possible an incoming government will look to further protect health, but that would then mean finding money from elsewhere. The second question is a very much an economic one. How is the Scottish economy doing come this autumn? And if it looked like economic recovery was very slow or stalling, there may be a strong temptation to take some money out of current spending and shift it over to capital to boot the economy up and get it moving again. So you have to say we live with some significant uncertainty. We have not even worthwhile indicative figures for the years after this one, so you're operating on a one-year planning horizon, which is totally disastrous if you're thinking about the best way of developing your services over time. To help you a little here, we've done a bit of very detailed work with colleagues in Scottish Government to model up the future through to 2017-18, taking what we know about income trends, what's likely to happen to the income of the public service in Scotland, what we know about demand trends, and looking at how that pans out over time. And the depressing thing, I think, is how quickly income that's going down for the next 3 years will be overtaken by demand. Our estimate for councils alone is by 2013-14, there will be a £1.7 billion gap between where demand's going and the way we currently deal with demand, and where our income's going. And by 2016-17, a £2.8 billion gap. Now, you could do the same model for the health service and it will show much the same thing. Now, we could just hand round the box for the razor blades now, go and get a coffee and give up. But the point I would make is, that's assuming we carry on generating demand and dealing with demand the way we do just now. And my argument to you will be where the leadership really needs to go is stopping that happening. I convene a group not dissimilar to this at national level, a group that has on it chief constables, fire chief, National Health Service chief executives and council chief executives. And we did a bit of work to say what proportion of our expenditure is in what we've called negative demand. Demand where we let bad things happen, then we heave money at it. And the estimate across that group of people, who between them are responsible for £26 billion worth of expenditure locally across Scotland annually, was that 40% of their expenditure is dealing with negative outcomes once they occur, rather than preventing the negative outcomes occurring in the first place. And I'll give quite a detailed example later on in what I've got to say, but it does suggest that if we're facing a situation where in the current ways we deal with demand, we will be swamped by 13, 14 and buried by 16, 17, a key target has to be shifting off a model that's reactive. Bad things happen, then we step in, and into a model that's about prevention, early intervention and so on. And you'll be aware, I'm sure, in all of your services, the emphasis that's been given across the last 2 years to shifting off the back foot onto the front foot. So in policing, how do we work with communities to reduce the incidences of crime and antisocial behaviour rather than respond to antisocial behaviour or crime once it's occurred? In health, it's been a key target since devolution that we could shift money out of the hospital sector because we became more effective in preventing people ending up in hospital. One would also honestly have to say our track record across the last decade as the money was flowing was disastrous. We managed to shift that not a whit across a decade, if you look at the aggregate figure. So we don't have a terribly strong track record here, but we have a very strong inducement, if we're right about the gap between demand and income, to say we will seriously now have to pull our fingers out and get on with this, because otherwise we're in very serious difficulties. So I emphasise the gaps I'm talking about, the 1.7 billion rising to 2.8 billion gap between income and demand, is what happens if nothing else happens. If the public service leaders in this room and elsewhere do nothing about where we are, can't shift focus and can't shift footing. If we can do that, the world gets better, not just in financial terms, it actually gets better for the people we serve. One of the figures that I think recurrently leaps out at you if you look at patterns of public spending in Scotland is that across the last decade, we've had a steadily growing expenditure on emergency admitting older people to hospital. It has grown from about 400 million per annum to, in 2009-10, 1.4 billion pounds per annum in Scotland. Put in perspective, about 3-4% of the total Scottish budget is spent emergency admitting older people to hospital. Now, this is not planned admissions for hip joint replacements and so on. This is people arriving in through A&E. It is a staggeringly large sum of money. It's a completely financially unsustainable sum of money. It assumes we'd build a new general hospital in Scotland every 18 months if we carry on doing it. Well, we're not going to build any new general hospital in Scotland across the next 15 years, so we are going to have to fundamentally alter our approach to how we deal with the needs of older citizens. But worse still, it doesn't just cost a fortune. It's a disastrous outcome for older people as well. Hospitals are not safe places for the frail, the old and the vulnerable, in a whole range of respects. Hospitals are not good places for people whose basic problems are they're having to live in housing that isn't adequately adapted to their needs. To throw a hospital at that is a catastrophic waste of public money. So there are areas that we really need to think through very carefully. We are working with the Christie Commission, whose challenge is, how do you have a public service across the next period that improves outcomes and is financially sustainable? Our argument to Christie is these two things go together. If you improve outcomes, you reduce demand on reactive public services. And therefore, the best way to become sustainable is to help the population to better outcomes in the first place. But across all the major outcome areas represented in this room, community safety, people's health and their healthy life expectancies, learning outcomes, destinations from children, how do they move on into the economy successfully and have good lives because they can earn well. In every single one of these areas, we have 20% of our population who've simply fallen off a cliff. A recent report published by the OECD looking at education in Scotland. We emerged to be the fifth best in Europe. Even though we're always told we're much worse than other people, we emerged to be the fifth best in Europe if you do comparable tests for kids at the age of 15. And that's aggregating math, science, and literacy. Yeah. So we aren't the catastrophe or basket case we're presented as being. Our average is actually very high, above England and Wales, above Sweden, who we're taught to admire and worship. So we do fine if you look at the average. But what the OECD note is if you break the average down, you're into a kind of catastrophe they don't find in any other country at all. That our top performers and even middle performers are well above average in international terms. Our bottom performers at the age of 15 are functioning as if they've had 6 years less education than the other 15-year-old. They have a functional age of 9 from an educational point of view. We know from our own statistics in Scotland, if you look across the last decade and you look at what have kids achieved by the age of 16, that the bottom 20% of our children are achieving less than a quarter of the top 80% of our children. So there is a real issue here, because we also then know if you take the kids who fail at school, they have 5 times more chance of moving straight into unemployment than other children. So you go from school to unemployment. They're 5 times more likely to have parents who are unemployed. They're much more likely to have drug and alcohol problems. 3 to 4 times more likely to have drug and alcohol problems. They're 6 times more likely to commit crimes or be the victims of crimes than other people. In other words, the kids we lose about the age of 13 or 14 in Scotland will drive public expenditure in Scotland across the next 30 years. The critical figure I think that Richard raised for us that we should not lose sight of across all of our services is the young unemployed. Fascinating study done by Glasgow Council and NHS Greater Glasgow tracked kids who were the lost generation in the first Thatcher recession in the 1980s. The chief executive's conclusions was it would have been far cheaper for us to have employed all of them than what they've cost us across the last 30 years. So there's a genuine issue here. As public expenditure comes down, every public agency is reducing its employer's capacity. We may be simply stimulating and creating a tsunami of demand that we will frankly be completely unable to process if you project that forwards. So it's not a pretty picture, but a lot of the reason it's not a pretty picture is how we use the nevertheless still massively substantial resource we have got. When I speak to English colleagues or colleagues in the Treasury, they have strikingly little sympathy for Scotland, I'd have to say. Because our levels of public expenditure are still an average 20% more per head than what they have down south. So they will not be holding a flag day for us, I think you can take it, and indeed see us as relatively privileged where we are. So there's a real issue for us. We will still be spending, by UK standards, and even relative European standards, very, very large sums of money on our public services across the next period. The question is, can we use the money better? And that's, I think, where the leadership issues come in. Leadership's critical here to shift the focus and ambition of our public service system in Scotland, which is why I think it's extraordinary and gratifying to see the range of people here today from across all of the public services that will support people's lives in and around Murray and enable people to have more positive and better lives into the future. I used, when I was talking about leadership, to use a joke I heard a very long time back. Person's driving home from work, they get a phone call from their partner, watch out, there's some lunatic driving the wrong way down the motorway. And he says, you're not joking, there's thousands of them. And I think there's a slightly narcissistic, stupid view of leadership that says that's what it's like. You know, leaders are people who drive the wrong way down motorways, they stand out, and so on. I want to argue precisely the opposite with you today. I think that's a very indulgent type of leadership, that actually what we need are people who, because they're committed to common and agreed outcomes, and I doubt there's anybody in this room doesn't want the best for 14-year-olds in Murray just now, doesn't want the 16 to 20-year-olds to be in permanent unemployment. We all want to see that happen. It's about collaboration, therefore, leadership. It is not simply about striking Napoleonic poses, driving things through, and so on. Indeed, I think in the current climate, where the outcomes we're trying to achieve are incredibly complicated, the chief constables I work with Colin McEricker, would argue very strongly, police can't make communities safe. They can deal with unsafety when it arises, they can react and respond, and so on. But actually, communities make themselves safe by their own capacity, by their own relationships, and working with the communities that are most vulnerable to build those capacities is as important as we go forward as simply responding to the fact they don't have those capacities. So leadership, I think, as we move forward into this new climate, is going to be very much about how do we work together across the whole range of public services to create more confident and secure communities, and through that then, communities in which older people come to less grief than they currently do, through that to have kids who can see a value in education because they can see it taking them somewhere. We've just done a study of the 1% most deprived areas in Scotland. And if you look at those areas, you can quite understand why kids wouldn't stick in at anything that was boring. Because I can say to my daughter, stick in, yeah, geometry is not very interesting when you start it, but you've got to do it to get here. Education isn't a route for the kids in the 1%, 5%, 15% most deprived areas in Scotland. And indeed, if you speak to kids in those areas, they will tell you, what do you need to know? You need to understand the benefit system from an early age, because that's how you're going to live. And therefore, you need to understand how it works and how you work it. And they can give you anecdotal evidence and stories about what it's like to be clever around the benefit system. I was interviewing some kids in Glasgow, and they talked to me about sharing a stookie, a plaster. If they haul you into regional medical services, we've got a common plaster, you shove it on and you wander in to illustrate the fact that you're not fit for work at this juncture. Now, that's knowledge. That's creativity. Colleagues in the police in Glasgow said to me, if you look at the distribution networks for drugs in some areas of Glasgow, how complex they are and how you can't write it down and have, you know, a web-based solution for it because that would kind of give the game away, then people are doing things in their heads that are more complex than many businesses can manage. So it's not these kids lack entrepreneurship, they lack any positive direction for the entrepreneurship they've got. So I think when you're thinking about leadership, it's about how do all the public services work together. And I would include in that a point Councillor Wright and I have discussed before, the non-devolved services. In the next year, Job Centre Plus, on behalf of DWP, will put over £4 billion into the Scottish economy. If you take our economic development agencies between them, they won't put £1 billion into the Scottish economy. I know who I'd be choosing to work with, because it's going to be absolutely critical to ensuring we use that £4 billion well to create opportunities for people rather than otherwise. So, first core point, I think, around leadership is it is about collaboration. If that's right, key skills have to be how we work across boundaries. Because as we go into the period we're going into, every organisation we work for is under pressure. I met with council finance directors yesterday, and it's fair to say it was not the most extraordinarily upbeat event one could have attended, but I'm sure if I'd met with the finance directors from colleges, from the police service and so on, you know, their view will be, we've got to control and protect our budget because they are charged with that responsibility on behalf of their organisation. The real danger is we all do things within our budget to protect it that either shunt costs onto our partners or just leave older people, unemployed youngsters, children at school falling straight through the big holes we create as we go forward here. So leadership is about collaboration. That means the willingness to try and build and secure a sense of common interest, not competing interest within the public service itself. But we can only do that, I think, by meeting together, working together, and so on. The third thing I'd say is that though leadership is often seen to be kind of up there, in my sense, the critical leaders, from the public's point of view, the people we serve, are yourselves. Yes, the people up there can bugger it up for you, and we all frequently do that. Hopefully we'll do it less across the next 5 years, but we can do it to you because we don't know enough. National discussions are often staggeringly ignorant discussions. They're informed about no understanding of anywhere and any people in any context. But if I look at the shared services that I've observed that work best, if I look at the integration of services, it's not the ones that chief constables and chief execs are talking about. It's people out there just doing it. And indeed, identifying something as a shared service is often the quickest way of killing it off. So if you just go on with it and do it by working collaboratively at local level, that'll achieve more for people than us surfacing everything, doing business cases for it, taking 8 years to come to any conclusion whatsoever, then deciding it wasn't worth it in the first place. There's a bit of leadership that is about your accountability to the people in the areas you work, the people you serve, and the other people you can work with to serve those people better. And that's within your scope, that's within your control. You can do that better and more ably as we go forwards. So take these three things. Leadership is about collaboration. That means key skills are how you work across boundaries, how you understand other people's pressures, so you can better connect with them and coordinate your activities with their activities. But it's also about local leaders taking responsibility and not waiting for national leaders or higher level strategic leaders to sort. They won't sort everything out. Much of this you are going to do. And flexibility, fleetness of foot at local level is critical. That would give me a fourth thing I'd ask you to think about across the day. And it's about risk. What inhibits us? Any one of us working with a family, or a child, or an older person can see better ways of working. Indeed, the frustration is very often we seem to be forced into ways of working that are not good for the older person, the child, or the family. Why don't we just sort it then? What are we waiting for? And I think there is that sense that if you do anything, you put yourself at risk, while trundling on doing what you're doing just now puts you at no risk at all. All I would say to you is, leadership's the kind of antidote to early retirement. If you find yourself doing things you don't believe a word of and don't think are right, go, is the honest truth. You have retired anyway inside your own head. There's a real merit, I think, in saying we exaggerate risk very often in our practice as leaders. Who's going to come and get you? Just an example, up in one of the island councils who have, I shouldn't say it's out too loud, but seem to me to be engaged in systematic state aid for the local businesses, which is illegal under European law. And what's admirable about them is it's also necessary to keep their businesses going, so they just do it. And if anybody arrive from Europe, they'll play the tuchter. They will go, oh, really? Gosh, we didn't know that. You know, and again, you think, how many Eurocrats are around there? Over in Paris last year, and the French said to me, the reason you people hate Europe is you implement its directives. In France, we understood long ago that you agreed to them, then you did nothing about them. It's your own mentality that does you in Britain. You are so meticulous about implementing everything to the nth degree that you make your own lives harder, then you blame Europe for it. Just relax was the message. Now, I'm not saying we should relax on key things, we should behave dishonestly or dishonourably. What I am saying is I think we can hem ourselves in inside our own heads. We see something that should be done. I would be saying to you, part of leadership is then doing it. Getting the other people you need to speak with and pushing that forward. I hope between Richard and myself, we've sketched out the context is difficult. I hope equally, though, you'll take my point that if 40% of our current spending is on the negative, we have actually a very big space in which to explore the positive. And if there is a focus for leadership, it's ultimately about outcomes. And I know the language of outcomes has become rather tedious now and slightly abstract. But if what we mean is that older person's life is better, that child will genuinely have opportunities when they leave school, that person has understood that the best way to sort their issues with other people is not just to hit them. That's what I mean by outcomes. And it's only, I think, those who lead the services locally, right down at the level where they meet families, individuals and communities, who can provide that essential leadership that the public service will need. Yes, hard times, massive opportunities. And with the commitment and skills of people like yourself as you explore them across the day, we can do a hell of a lot better for the people of Scotland on significantly less than we've used in the past. Thank you very much.
This recording is copyright of Iris 2011. It may be reused under the terms of the Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Sharealike 2.5 UK Scotland license. Go to www.iris.org.uk for more information.